Okay, so this week we have Parshiot, Vayakel, Pukudei, and Para. In Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, it says, Vaya'as Bitzalel et Aaron, Atzei Shitim Amatayim V'chetzi Erko V'ama V'chetzi Rachvo V'ama V'chetzi Komato. So it tells us that Bitzalel made the Aaron, which, by the way, looking at this verse by itself really is quite unexceptional, because, I mean, as far as we understand, Bezalel's in charge of the construction. Bezalel's in charge of the whole procedure, so it says Bezalel did. Now, what you may or may not notice, and you'd have to look at the whole rest of the construction to see this, that this is the only verse that says Vaya'as Bezalel. It's the only verse that says Bezalel actually did something, which means, as you know, supervisors generally don't get their hands dirty, as it should be. Supervisors are there to supervise, and a good supervisor is one who knows how to delegate, and apparently Bezalel is a good supervisor, knows how to delegate, because what it sounds like, again, the implication from this verse, is that the only thing that he does directly is this. Now, Rashi is clearly aware of this, because Rashi knows the Chumash quite well. And therefore, in source number two, Rashi comments and says, "Vaya'as Bezalel, Bezalel made the Aaron, lefi shenatan nafsho al hamalacha yoter mishar chachamim nikret al shemo." That because that, and now the phrase over here is shenatan nafsho. What does that exactly mean? Shenatan nafsho. He gave his soul. Shenatan nafsho. He gave his soul more than all the other wise men. I guess that's the way to explain Chachamim. It's called by his name, which means Rashi is not necessarily telling us, did Bezalel do anything else? Did he not do anything else? What Rashi's telling us is over here, he really gave of himself, and therefore it's been called in his name. So you see that Rashi is, in a sense, dealing with, not in a sense, Rashi is dealing with this problem. Why over here it says Vayas Pasala? Because it says that he put more into it. Now it's interesting, it doesn't say he put more into it than he did all the other things. He put more into it than all the other people, which is also interesting. The Siftei Chachamim, one of the quote-unquote super commentaries, which means he's a commentary on Rashi, explains, Nir lefi shaha aron v'hakporet im hakruvim, He starts to say is that part of the problem is that the way to make the Aaron, the way to make the Ark, is connected with the Kaporet, together with the Kruvim, which means this whole mass structure is made out of one piece of gold, and therefore the construction of this is a little bit more complicated than you would normally think, and therefore he says, V'hayatzorich yoter chochma v'da'at u'lachshov machshavot. It needs more, let's say, literally, wisdom, understanding, and to think thoughts. Or what it really means is calculations. U'malachto yoter kveda mikol klei ha-mishkan o-mishkan atzma. And this work is really more heavy, but I think over here he means more difficult, than all the other kelim, all the other utensils in the Mishkan, or the Mishkan itself. So therefore, what he seems to be telling us is that when Rashi says that this took more, or he put more of himself into it, what he's saying is that the planning of this, the thoughts involved in constructing it, which means as an architect, the making of this particular thing, the Ark, was more complex than anything else, and therefore it required the most amount of work. Oh, so it sounds like from the way the Siftei Chachamim is explaining it, is that what he's talking about is really much more technical, intellectual, if you will, calculations. Although when we go back to the Rashi, well, before we get back to the Rashi, we'll just finish it. Aval aron v'kapod hayat tzarich lasod b'uman yad. Looks like I skipped a line. Rak menorah shenit kashaba Moshe halo nasit me'aleha, but lo asa Bezalel. So here, he adds in that the menorah, which was also very difficult, that was just done by itself, miraculously. Obviously, he's working off of other information that we don't have right here in front of us. And Bezalel did not make that, he says definitively. Aval ha'aron v'kaparot haya tzarich lasot be'uman yad, l'kach nekra shmo kan yoter mikol sharei melachot. That this needed an artisan who was very advanced, and therefore this is associated with Bezalel, who, bless you, who was such an artisan. So again, what information do we have? What's the problem? What's the solution so far? We're told from all the work done in the Mishkan, around the Mishkan, Bezalel, we're told, was in charge. But the only thing we're told Bezalel did personally is the Ark. Rashi says because he put more into it than all the others. The Siftei Chachamim explains, what does it mean he put more into it? It means that this required more intellectual dexterity, although not just intellectual. It sounds like he's also saying it also required more a greater artisan to be able to do it, and therefore this was what he did. And if we go back and read the Rashi, because again, whenever you have commentaries, you always need to go back and see how well the commentary fits into the words of what he's commenting. And let's remember, the Siftei Chachamim is not explaining the verse directly, at least he would not admit that he is. He is commenting on Rashi. He's explaining what Rashi said. So Rashi says, Lafish natan nafsho al malacha. And what does that phrase mean, natan nafsho? Right? It means he put... Yeah, so it's not exactly what the Siftei Chachamim is saying, because I think shenatan nafsho may actually have other implications as well, which just before you comment, I mean, generally, even though he's not using that phrase, so don't question me afterwards, but there may be a parallel term. We use a term sometimes, mesirut nefesh. What does mesirut nefesh mean? Somebody who is moser nefesh. So give me an example where we would use a phrase and say mesirut nefesh.
Dedication to a cause or something like that.
Right, so... Right, so that's what a couple of you said. Mesirut nefesh could be the point of sacrificing one's life.
It's okay. I was thinking,
although people will use the term as if they've given their soul, although the reality is more often than not, in these cases, they gave their soul, they actually elevated their soul. It's not they gave their soul. It's mesirut neshama, or... I mean, there's a difference between nefesh and neshama. I mean, again, I don't want to get too Kabbalistic right now, but what is nefesh? Nefesh is generally the more animalistic level. What's neshama? Neshama is a higher spiritual level. An animal has a nefesh. An animal does not have a neshama. Ki adam hu nefesh. The reason you don't need blood is because it is the living force of an animal, not necessarily the soul of an animal. So it's interesting that the word mesirut nefesh means that I gave my body. It doesn't mean I gave my soul, because the neshama gets elevated, right? Did that make any sense? What I just now said? People, I think, often miss. Here, I'll give you an example, which maybe mesirut neshama, maybe, but you can argue with me in a moment. Let's say somebody's capable of a very great intellectual achievement and accomplishments. And instead of involving themselves in the much higher level, they help a young kid do his homework and learn the alphabet. So he could be involved in very, very high, but he's involving himself in something which is relatively low. So I could then say he is moser neshama, but then you'll counter-argue and say, well, who's to say if he teaches the kid alphabet what you get out of it? So I'm just saying is that the term mesirut nefesh, mesirut neshama, not necessarily the same thing, because you give your body, but you elevate your soul. Over here, it says, lefish natan nafsho. And I wonder what Rashi meant by that. Again, does Rashi mean as... the Siftei Chachamim is taking us, he's leading us down the path of saying, well, this was real hard work, and he had to think about it a lot, and then it took a great deal of dexterity, or is it talking about something which is more? So I'm leaving that open right now. Yeah.
The two things you mentioned, the menorah, and this both had, for lack of a better word, miraculous properties. the kruvim turn and they turn away. Were there any other kelim that did that, or are these the two? What I'm saying is, was bitzol masarim nafsho? This had a spiritual.
I think you can argue that others had mer. If you start to go down that path, you can argue that all kinds of things had mer. There was a lot more. If I were to say these are the only, then people would argue with me. There are places to argue, including the Urim V'Tumim, and we can keep on going. I mean, there are other places where there are miraculous things emerge. Yes?
I must be missing something. The same word is used all the time. Why just here? Because his name is used. Is this single dad is the only
thing? I said, over here, Yom Tov, it says Vayas, that he did it.
Yeah, but
it says every Vayas.
But Salo.
Yeah, but it's, the only difference is that it says actually
Bitzalah. Right. That's where the emphasis is. The other times it could have been other people on the team. Over here it's the only time it says Vayas Bitzalah.
Yeah, he's focusing on the word Vayas, but the word
together, Vayas.
Is
right. Vayas with Bitzalah, correct.
Why do we think he didn't do that?
As I said, it could have said every time Vayas Bitzalel, or could have said the whole thing Vayas Bitzalel et hakol. But this is the only time that it specifically connects him with it. And there were other people. If you go back, there were other people involved. Oholiav, there were other people involved in the making things as well. Over here is the only time it specifically says Vayas Bitzalel. One second. It's fair to say that the implication of the verses is that Bitzal did everything personally. I would say you could say that. That's fair. But nonetheless, even with the implication, you didn't have to respond to why is it implied in the other cases and specifically stated in this case. That's the whole issue.
When Moshe's speaking, do we have it always Moshe's name? Every few sentences, Moshe continued to say Moshe said?
Often. Take a look at source 4, the Midrash Tanchuma. Again, just that you get the sense this is not my own emphasis over here. No, I'm saying it's the fact that it says clearly. In other words, it's by implication. Vayas Bitzalel et Aaron, einat motzi be'achad mikol klei ha-mishkan, shasa sham Bitzalel klum elo ba'aron. V'kol ha-melachot acherot, kol ha-kilim acherot, ba'amirato uva'atzato. Which means it's saying the only time it specifically says that Bitzalel did something is over here by the Aaron. You don't find it otherwise. And all the other cases, the Midrash Tanchuma is saying, it's in fact by his instructions and his advice. But again, delegating, instructing, supervising, but not himself doing it. V'loma piresh ba'aron milachto levad v'asa biyado. And why does it state only by exclusively by the Aaron that he did it himself? B'shvil sheshem tzilo shel HaKodesh Baruch Hu, because there was the shadow of God. Now this is a very challenging phrase. Tzilo shel HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Now, anybody know why it's saying this? Why it's using the word the shadow of God? Because his name is Bitzalel. So it wants to connect his name to what we're about to say. Shesham tzilo shel Kodesh Baruch Hu, because in this instance, in the Aaron, the shadow of God is there. Shehu mitzamtzem sham shchinato, that it's there that God contracts his divinity, as it were. By the way, let's finish, then I'll explain. Ulefichach kara Bitzalel, and therefore his name is Bitzalel, sha'asat tzilo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ben shnei kruvim, that he then created this place for the shadow of God between the kruvim. Shenemar, as it says, adati lecha sham v'dibarti itcha, that I will make myself known from that place. Lo kvar nerma, doesn't it already say, lo tshemayim v'et ha'aretz ani malei, doesn't it already say that God fills up entire creation? But now God, who fills up the entire creation, God's voice will be designated to one particular specific place, and that is the voice will emanate, transmit, as it were, from between the two kruvim. Now, the reason why this may be interesting is that for those of you who are students of history and or students of Kabbalistic doctrine, then you very well know that one of the major teachings of the Arizal in the 16th century was, quote-unquote, this teaching of Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum, namely that the process of creation is a process where the infinite God, where all that there is an infinite God, there is no other existence, where the infinite God somehow contracts itself, and that is the process of creation. The process of creation is God holding back infinity and allowing coexistence, rather than God forcing its infinity upon everything. So because there's a problem adding to infinity, so the solution philosophically, Kabbalistically, is one of the quote-unquote limitation of infinity. This process, this concept, which the Arizal definitely, and then he speaks about the shattered kelim along the way that takes place, and if you have no idea what I'm talking about, so just like smile and shake your head, and it's fine. But just in case that one would think that the Arizal creates the term or the concept, over here you see both the term and the concept being mentioned by the Medrash Tanhuma long, long before the Arizal. So it's not the Arizal inventing a concept, it's the Arizal developing a concept, and the Arizal then is teaching this concept. But what the Medrash Tanhuma is telling us is that God's divinity fills up everything, and the process of making the Mishkan is a process whereby now God's voice will emanate from one small, constricted place. Okay, now, I don't know if that sounds like a problem or a solution to you, or just a fact. But from the very outset, one of the reasons which is stated to create the Mishkan is to create a place where God's voice will continue. And as I said, we've learned the Ramban numerous times. The Ramban tells us that's the main purpose of the Mishkan. We had the voice of God which emanated at Mount Sinai, and now we need a place for the voice of God to continue to emanate. So if you hear what the Medrash Tanhuma is stating, is that Bezalel understood these rules of constriction, as it were, tzimtzum, and therefore because he understood the deep mystical concept of being able to create a space for God to communicate, or for some of you, if you prefer, a transmitting device whereby God's voice will be able to emanate, that's why he's called Bezalel. This is the shadow of God is emanating, and therefore he himself, his name is connected to the shadow of God. So therefore, it's an interesting connection to the name. But as you saw, the starting point of this midrash again is, here's the only time that we see Bezalel's name directly used, because this is really what the whole essence of the whole Mishkan is about. And therefore, in a sense, if Bezalel is the builder of the Mishkan, I could even argue, again, I'm not really saying what I'm about to say, but I can argue if the whole point of the Mishkan is to create a place that God's voice will emanate from, so therefore whoever creates the Aron has created the whole Mishkan. It's not what he says over here. He does supervise the other things, but this is the only thing which he really needs to make in order to create the Mishkan, because that's the major purpose of the Mishkan.
When you say shadow, I started by thinking of it as a negative, a withdrawal, because shadow is not the real thing.
Right.
But when you talk about the constriction, what I'm hearing is that God withdraws into that place between approving.
Correct. Right. So but it's only a shadow. It's a shadow of God in the sense that God is infinite, but now the infinite is being manifest in a finite place. Yeah.
Is this the source of all of the comparisons between the malacha of the Mishkan and the work that's working on Shabbat?
It's the same area. It's the start. It may be a starting point for that, but that is in the beginning of the Yakel anyway. That if you will look in my book Explorations, I have a whole chapter on that. Yes.
Where is the light of God coming to
this? The light. Maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see. If you look at source 9, if we get to it, okay, we'll look at 9. She wants the light. Sha'ol Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak et Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman. I heard that your reputation is such that you know how to explain agadot, or you know how to teach agadot. Because where did light come from? That God wrapped himself in a garment, and that caused the world to be filled with light from head to head, from the beginning to the end. V'fichach patach dvarecha yair. Therefore, the beginning of your words will lighten. B'meni lamdu at tzadikim kishayu matchilim b'davar. Therefore, righteous people understood when you start something, you start with light. Atamotse, for example, you find b'shashamar kodesh baruch hu l'moshe she'asat mishkan. When you find that God told Moshe to make the mishkan, I'm a betzalel ubama iftach. What will I start with? Tchila first. Patach baron. He began with Aaron. Shenema v'asu aron. So, if you follow this whole logic over here, it sounds very clearly that he's saying is that the whole idea of the mishkan is connected to light. Why would that be? Why would that be? Is because what goes inside the Aron? Torah. V'ora zu Torah. If those of you... What? What do you mean by how? Are you... I don't understand your question. Are you speaking of light in terms of Noach's Teva, that there was a thing with light which filled up the Teva, and you want physical light? Or are you talking about spiritual light?
I am talking about spiritual light.
Okay. Don't say accept it.
The light thing,
yeah,
in the Teva is connected to that too.
I know. And the constructions are connected as well.
He says here Z, not or.
So right.
How do you translate
Z, it's or,
but it's not really.
So I'll say it like this, is that Ein Ora El Torah, Lehudim Haita, right? What did you do in Purim? Lehudim, right? Lehudim Haita Ora V'simcha V'san. Ein Ora El Torah. That's what the Gemara says, that the Torah is light. So therefore what it's saying is that the purpose of the Torah is to enlighten the world, and therefore the build, and again, that's the direct understanding of this Midrash over here, is that what will be placed within the Mishkan, within the Aron, in the Ark, will be the Torah. By the way, read right now, Ten Commandments. That is this, as it were, primary light which will fill up the world. And that is the direct understanding of what this Midrash is telling us. But it also leads us to the same point that I was saying before, is that the major purpose of the Mishkan, according to this, is not the Korbanot, is not the offerings, not anything else. The major purpose of the Mishkan is a place, again, you have a problem. And I've mentioned this before. What is our problem? A place. You need a place to put the Luchot. Moshe's going to come down with Luchot. Where are you going to put them? So you need a place to put the Luchot. So over here, we're told that the Ark is of incredible significance for the entire construction. Yeah.
But isn't the first thing they really start with? I mean, even though it seems to be saying it's starting with the Ark, but here it's saying when they started with the curtains.
Yeah. So what we have is... what we have is a great deal of Torah Shebal Peh, and we'll take a look. First of all, to make you happy from your observation before, take a look at the Ibn Ezra in source number 5, because he also read the Chumash, and he was totally unconvinced of everything that we've seen, which again is interesting, because you have this whole Midrashic understanding, and you have if you read the verses, you have perhaps a different understanding. The Ibn Ezra says, V'yas b'tzal b'avur kavod ha'aron. It says this out of the honor for the Aron. And then it says, Gam huasa kol klei hamikdash, because the reality is that he made all of the klei hamikdash. Right? So the Ibn Ezra, v'hinei hizkir mishkan va'ohav ha'prochet v'masach, ki derech echad lehem. And it mentions all the other things, and it's all the same. But Bezalel made everything. V'achek hizkir shemen ha'mishchak, turet, and so on. So he's claiming that Bezalel made everything. So as I said, your observation that you could understand it that way is clear. The Midrash, on the other hand, is focusing on another point. What's the Midrash's focus? The fact that all the others will be by implication, and you can argue with the other ones. This is the only one that you can't argue with, and therefore the Ark takes precedence. The Nitziv in source number 6 is interesting to this extent that he chooses to look at things symbolically. Vayas Bezalel, Mevorah b'Midrash Parshat Truma, Da'asiyat Aron Garam L'Zchut HaTorah, that the making of, it says in the Midrash, in Parshat Truma, that the making of the Ark created a merit of Torah. So, which is, again, the connection between Ark and Torah should be of no surprise to us on two levels. One is what's placed in the Ark, again, the Luchot, that is Torah. Second is what happens from the Ark, what emanates, the voice of God emanates. What does the word Torah mean in its base level? The word Torah, what does it mean? Instructions, right? It means instructions. So the instructions from God will continue to emanate from this, which means this is the source of Torah in every level of its understanding. V'kach shevet Yehuda zachu liyot mechokekim. Because of the creation of the Ark, which we'll see on two levels, therefore the tribe of Yehuda, they're the ones who become the mechokekim. What does mechokekim mean? Legislators. Can somebody bring me a verse which supports this? Legislators. Can somebody bring me the word chok means law. Michokakim is those who create law. Can somebody bring me a verse to support this? That Yehuda is specifically connected to this? Correct, in the Brachot of Yaakov. It says, Lo tosur shevet miyuda u'michokek mi ben raglav. That the the rule, which means the kingship, is in the hands of Yehuda, and the legislature will be within his domain as well. So it says, what does it mean over here? Liot mechokim, haynu lasot halachot mechudashot, the ability of creating new law, al pi yud gimel midot, vavayot ha-talmud, sheze nikra ma'aseh, which means the creation on Bezalel's part. Keep in mind Bezalel's from Shevet Yehuda, the creation on Bezalel's part, right? The creation on Bezalel's part of the Ark will create the spiritual power for his descendants to be involved in the creation of new laws based upon the principles that the Torah is interpreted in something which you would sometimes call Talmud, which is the word he actually uses here as well. By the creation of the Aron, which houses the Torah, therefore they were able to create Torah. And just like Aron directly, personally, created this, made this ark, so what does he do after he makes it? He hands it over to the Levim, and the Levim were going to be the ones to carry it. So listen to this incredible symbolic interpretation that the Netziv then brings. They're the ones who will carry it and establish it and put it in its proper place so that its purpose will be fulfilled. So too in future generations. Sheva Yehuda yu mechokokim. The tribe of Yehuda will be the legislators. V'shevet Levi ba'imachare hachra'atam umorim lamasa haba lefneim. Shevet Levi, which historically did have a great deal concentration of teachers, they're the ones who will then actually take the laws which were legislated by Yehuda, and they're the ones who will then spread it to Klal Yisrael. So again, it's just very interesting. We go back to this symbolism of the Ark with Torah. So he says, okay, the creator is Bezalel, but those who carry are Levi. So the Netziv is pointing out, and the same will happen throughout history, is that the creators, the ones who will legislate the law, will be from the tribe of Yehuda, like Bezalel, and those who will carry it and spread it to throughout the Jewish people will be the tribe of Levi. So as I said, it's just interesting as he's taking this and applying it. Now, Correct. Did I talk about that last week? Yeah. That's not an excuse. 2 weeks ago.
You were here?
2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. Now, in source number 12, in Sefer Dvarim, Deuteronomy, for some of you, Pasuk Aleph, Moshe says, Be'et ahi, and around that time, Amar Hashem, Eli, God said to me, Psolucha shnei luchot avanim kirishonim. So now tell me which time that is, based upon the verse. Right? It's when Moshe is being told, make two new tablets. Basically, you broke the ones I gave you, you make new ones now. Va'ale elai ha'har, come to the mountain, va'asita lecha aron eitz, and make an ark of wood. Now, again, Moshe's telling the whole story over later on. Again, in Devarim, Moshe's giving a recap of things that happened. But he adds a real interesting couple, four words over here that we were not necessarily aware of when we read about the events in the last couple of weeks. And what did he add over here that we were not aware of? He says to Moshe, come up and make the luchot and make an ark for the luchot. Now, why would I need an ark for the luchot? So I've told you from the beginning. What's the problem? I need a place to put the luchot. I need a place to put the tablets when Moshe comes down. Now, Rashi explains over here in Source 13, Be'etahi, l'sof arba imyom, nitratza li, v'amar li psolacha, God accepted my prayers and said to me, make these new tablets, v'achakach v'asiti lecha aron, and then he says to me, make this ark. V'ni asiti aron tchila, and I made the ark first. Why? Before he even goes up. That when I come down and the tablets will be in my hand, where am I going to put them? And over here, Rashi tells us, he gives us information, he says, and this is not the ark which Bezalel made. By the way, it is interesting that, at least according to Rashi, if we're not mistaken, we could be mistaken, but at least according to Rashi, because the whole issue of chronology and the whole second half of the book of Shemot is incredibly challenging, right? From the beginning of Parashat Truma, right? Last scene, Moshe's up on the hill, and next thing we know, God says, make a Suli Mishkan, and so on, Suli Mikdash, Shekhanti Betocham, and he gives all the instructions for making the Mishkan. We at that sense lose... At that point, we lose a sense of timing and where we are, which means it is possible, according to Rashi, that this is the very first instruction having to do with what will one day become the Mishkan. Which means this instruction that he gives, at which point is it? Or according to Rashi, he says that the Cheta Egel took place before the instructions of the Mishkan. So presumably, according to Rashi, all the instructions that we have in Parshat Truma and onward came after Moshe goes up the second time. Moshe then gives those instructions when he comes down the second time, when he comes down after Yom Kippur. Which means, again, just to get the timing right, Moshe goes up the first time around the time that we have the holiday of Shavuot. Moshe comes down the first time around the time that we have Shivasar B'Tammuz. Moshe then prays for approximately 40 days. That's what Rashi referred to over here. Rashi has three sets of 40 days. He prays for around 40 days, and then he's told to come up again. That's where we're up to right now. This is around Rosh Chodesh Elul. Moshe now comes up for 40 days, and during those 40 days, he's told to build the Mishkan. So according to what Moshe says, according to the way that Rashi understands it, what will one day become, or morph into an entire Mishkan, seems to be the first instructions is to make this ark, except for one thing. Rashi tells us that everything I just now said is wrong, because it's not the same ark. Rashi says, no, this is not the same ark. V'lo zehu ha'aron shasa b'tzalel, shere mishkan lo nitasku bo ad la'achar yom ha'kippurim. They didn't start dealing with the Mishkan until after Yom Kippur. Ki beredeto min ha'har, that only when he came down, tziva lehem ha'melechet ha'mishkan, did he instruct them regarding the work of the Mishkan, when he came down the second time after Yom Kippur. U'b'tzalel asa mishkan tchila, and B'tzalel, when he made it, what did he make first? First he made the Mishkan, the achar kach aron v'kelim, and only afterwards did he make the aron v'kelim. Now how Rashi knows that, we'll hold on to for a second. Nimtza, we find, look inside, ze aron acher haya, this must have been a different ark. V'zeo shayotzei imam l'milchama. And Rashi adds, why do we need another ark? Because Rashi obviously is going to feel, okay, what happens to this other ark? Rashi says, this other ark is the one that they take out to war with them. Votosha asa bitzalel lo yatzal milchama. Ella bimei Eli, and the one that Betzal made never went out to war, well, except when it did go out to war in time of Eli, v'ne'enshu alav v'nishba, and they were punished, and it was captured. So, Rashi now tells us that we actually have two arks, and not just one.
So, my question is, what happened that now the Luchot need a covering? Because the first Luchot didn't, reminds me of Adam and Chava, like after the Chet.
Right.
They were covered in ore, and now suddenly they need...
Well, it didn't need anything for another reason, but we'll get there in a second. The Yerushalmi in Source 11.
The first one. So what's the difference between the first one?
With no one else, when the Levites move them, how are they going to move them?
But when Moshe first comes down, God doesn't tell him to put the Luchot in an ark. He's holding them in his hands. So what's the essential difference between the first Luchot and the second Luchot?
Okay. You'll. The Yerushalmi in Source 11 says as follows. This, by the way, is the source, if any of you ever heard this legend about what happened to the Ark, right? There have been movies about this, right? What happened to the Ark? According to the Mishnah in Shkalim, it was actually buried underneath the Beit HaMikdash. The Mishnah, according to the Mishnah.
That's the second Ark, the gold Ark.
Well, first let's see how many there are. They had a tradition that this is where the Aron was buried. There was once a coin who was preoccupied. And he noticed one place in the Beit HaMikdash that the balato were a little strange. So I know most of you would be thinking dollars. Ubav amar l'chavei rav, and he went and he told the others, lo hispik l'gmor et davar, he didn't get the words out of his mouth, ad sheid stan nishmato, till he died. V'yadu b'yichud shesham Aron nignaz. Because it's known that that's where the Aron was buried, but apparently from this Mishnah, it was not desired to be revealed where it was buried. So again, all the legends that you may know about that it's buried, we're not supposed to know it. It comes from this Mishnah, that somebody did discern where it was, and apparently it was not the will of God that it be revealed. Based on that Mishnah, the Yerushalmi, we only have Yerushalmi and Shkalim, the Yerushalmi then says, Tani Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, Amar Shnei Aronot Tayu, Malchin Yisro Bamidbar, Echad Shaita HaTorah Nituna B'tocho, Ve'echad Shayu Shivrei Luchot Nituna B'tocho. There were two different Luchot, one contained within it the Torah, and the other contained within it the broken Luchot. Zeshaita HaTorah Nituna B'tocho Ya Munach Ba'ol Moed. The one with the Torah was left in the Ol Moed, Hadahu Dichtiv, and therefore it says, Va'orin Brit Hashem, Moshe Lo, Mashu Mikra, Hamechaneh, one second, Shibbutu Tem B'tacho, Haya Nechnas V'yotzei Mahen, Upamim Haya Mitra'ei Mahen, V'Rabbanan Amrei, Aron Achad Hayu, Upamachat Yetza Bimei Eli V'Nishba. So over here they say that there were two, but by the way, this is interesting, because I'm not so sure that this is what the Ramban was referring to. According to this, we may be up to three different Aronot. Because the Ohel Moed over here is presumably the Ohel Moed that Moshe sat in.
But so one for broken, one
for the Torah.
For the Torah, and one for transporting.
And one for the second Luchot. Because again, Rashi is referring to not the broken Luchot. Rashi is referring to a place to put the second Luchot. And the ones to put the second Luchot is to put the second Luchot until... Right? Until Betzalel is going to end up building it. So, as I said, we have the source of the Yerushalmi. How to interpret it, I'll leave it to you. In Source 14, that's what it sounds like. In source 14, the Ramban quotes Rashi, and he ends up not necessarily agreeing with him. Let's start from where it's underlined at the beginning, where it says, build an Aron. It says, V'lo amar lo b'luchot rishonot. But he didn't tell him to bring an Aron for the first Luchot. Why not? L'fi shahaya galui l'fanav sheyish bareim. Because God knew that they were going to be broken. So what you have is a little foreshadowing, according to the Ramban over here, that God knows they'll be broken, so you don't have to bother. Which, by the way, is not such a simple statement, because presumably the broken luchot also get put in. Right, right. Presumably they also get put away someplace, but that's what he says, is that God didn't tell him this the first time. He only says it the second time, because the first time, again, the Ramban's answering a question. What's his question? Why is that stated the first time? So what's his answer? The first luchot will be broken. Then he quotes Rashi, and we'll skip the whole time he quotes, and around 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 7 lines down there, he quotes the Rishalmi, Shekach Shinu B'Masechet Shkalim, Tanya Rabbi Yudibur Eli, Amar Shnei Ranot Hayu in Yisrael, and then the next line he writes, V'dat Rabotenu, B'komakom B'Talmud, and when he's quoting the Talmud here, he's quoting Talmud Bavli, Gemara Brachot, Baba Batra, Minachot, Einu Ken. He goes, our Gemara, our Bavli doesn't seem to know about this that you just that we quoted from the Rishalmi. Ela luchot v'shivrei luchot munuchin ba'aron. That no, is that in the Aaron, in the Mishkan, or later in the Beit HaMikdash, both the luchot and the broken luchot are together, which means that we just now went down from arguably three to maybe two or maybe even one. Our own, and that seems to be the tension over here between the Ramban and between Rashi. Yes? The first Aaron was made of wood, right? So why couldn't it have been incorporated into this? Ah, good. I was thinking about that as well. Hold on a second. It was but the Ramban writes on the next page, second paragraph, of Aaron Hazesh Moshe, this Aaron which Moshe made, Kishina Ase Aaronosho Bitsalo, when Bitsalo made his, Ganzu kidin tishmei sheik dusha. It was already put away, buried as any kind of tashmei sheik dusha, which are no longer needed, get treated. V'zeh nachon odat rabotenu, and that seems to be the way that our Gemara would understand it, because the other Aaron falls into disuse. Ki al derech habsha itachen ki v'asita lecha Aaron eitz yirmoz la'aron shesa betzalo. Even though he says you should make it out of wood, can be making a reference to the one that Bezalel will make. V'zeh, ki mitchilin etzdave Moshe al hamishkan v'kelav. So it really sounds that the Ramban is explaining it the way that I have said it before, that this is the first mention of what will one day morph into an entire Mishkan. Haitah mitzvah rishonah v'asu aron etzei shitim. And even if you go back and look in the verses in Parshat Truma, make a mikdash, and what's the first thing which is mentioned? Right, to make the Aron. Ki hi ikar hakavana bekol hamishkan liot Hashem yoshev hakruvim. And he goes, this is the major purpose, again, this is another time we see the Ramban saying it, this is the major purpose of the Mishkan, the kruvim. V'achareichen asu et ha'egel. But then the Jews sinned with a golden calf. K'ashen itratza Hashem l'Moshe, and once God was placated by Moshe, v'amar lo shechtov al luchot ha'elu kimechtav rishon, tzivau b'ktsara she'aseh luchot ha'ela aron eitz. It says it briefly, make an ark out of wood. Hi ha'mitzvah lo luchot ha'rishonot. This is for the first luchot, v'nei eskir lo mitzvah rishonah she'binyan mishkan v'shakol talui ba. And this really is the same ark that Bezalel will make. So again, with the Ramban, there's a whole other issue to this. And that's a little beneath the surface, which is why you may not be understanding what I'm saying right now. According to the Ramban, the instructions for the Mishkan were given before the golden calf. According to Rashi, they were given after the golden calf. So because the Ramban understands it was given before the golden calf to build the Mishkan, so over here when it makes reference to the ark, according to him it's very simple, it's the same ark. Now what Sarah said before is very interesting, and I was thinking about that as well, is that over here it says to make an ark out of wood, but the problem is that the ark which we later had will be made out of gold. But that's not the whole story. It's correct. It's made out of wood with gold on the outside, with gold on the inside. Which means it's surrounded by gold, but it's made out of wood. So it could arguably be that this, bless you, that this wood which is made, right, will then later literally become the same ark afterwards. So he says that, again, keep in mind, the Ohel Moed is the second thing that should confuse you, because there's more than one Ohel Moed. Right? There's one Ohel Moed which will be referred to in term. What does Ohel Moed mean? The tent of meeting. So there is an Ohel Moed which is connected to the Mishkan, but there's another Ohel Moed which Moshe makes before. During those 40 days when Moshe is praying, if you don't remember this, I'm sorry, I didn't give you the verse, it says he makes up a tent and he places himself outside of the camp, and it's called the Ohel Moed. It says when he would go to the people watching him and come back, so that's called the Ohel Moed. So he says, where did the broken luchot, where were they placed? They were placed in this Ohel Moed. And according to the Ramban, which means I don't need an ark, I have a structure for them. They were placed in this structure called the Ohel Moed. And that's all that would have been needed. So that's where he must have left them. He didn't take them up to the mountain. So therefore, as far as he's concerned, they were placed in the Ohel Moed. So apparently, according to the Ramban, we have over here a theory of conservation of arks. Okay? And according to Rashi, we have more arks. And the question really is, when God says to Moshe, make an ark, does that mean that Moshe made it? Or when God says to Moshe, make an ark, is that what Bezalel made? So as I said, what we have over here is room for a great deal of confusion. We saw the Yerushalmi goes in one direction. No, but one which further develops. Right, recycle if that's what you like. Okay.
This is a dumb question.
Oh, no, let me say that.
This is the term holomoid. You know, that it's like...
I don't think so.
And then you've got holomoid, which is kind of like a reduced...
No. It's that the word moed can have various usages. The word moed means a place of meeting. You can either meet God in terms of space or meet God in terms of time.
I'm thinking that in the time of the Second Temple, there was no Aaron, and that was the main purpose he said about...
Okay, we're about to get to that. Good. If you throw it to the floor, it stops. Okay, good. Actually, it only stops if you drop it by accident. If you throw it, it probably would keep on working. Right. It's also something that we saw along the way was the ark, the first thing made, the last thing made. I mean, the Gemara in Source 15 brings an argument about this. Or not even an argument, takes it in one particular direction. Amar of Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Bio Yonatan, Bitzalel Shem Chachmato Nikra. He's called for his wisdom. Bishar Shamar Lor Kadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Lech Amor Lo LeBitzalel Seli Mishkan VaAron VeKelim. When God tells Moshe, make for me a Mishkan, an ark, and the other utensils. Halach Moshe VaHafach VaAmar Lo Asay Aaron VeKelim Mishkan. Moshe says to Aaron, to Bitzalel, make an ark and the utensils and the Mishkan. Amar lo Moshe Rabbeinu, Bezalel says back to Moshe, min hagosh shel olam, the way that the world works is, adam bone bayit v'achach machnis l'tocho kelim. First you get a house, and then you fill it up with furniture. V'atalmer, and you say, seli aron v'kelim v'mishkan, and you're telling me first to make the furniture, and then to make the mishkan? Kelim shani oseh lech nachnisam. These utensils, I'm like, where am I going to put them? Shema kach amar l'kodesh baruch hu, did perhaps God say it the other way around? Asay mishkan v'aron kelim? Maybe God said it the other way? Amar lo, shema betzel el hayita v'yadat. He goes, you were again in the shadow of God, and that's how you knew. So again, according to this, it sounds like first the mishkan is made, and then, as I said, we could argue the other way. We can argue based upon this verse, that the first thing that we're told to make is actually our own, and then the whole commandments for the Mishkan follow. Okay. Let's take a look at something that we skipped. And that is source number... source number 10. This is the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma, you know who he was? Rav Meir Simcha from Dvinsk. He died in the early part of the 20th century. This was the first book that he wrote. He wrote it when he was around 17 years old. His father told him not to publish it, because then he'll only be known as somebody who wrote a commentary to the Chumash, and he'll never be taken seriously. So he never published it. He later on wrote a commentary to the Rambam, which is known as the Or Sameach, and gained a great reputation based upon that work. And after he died, they found the manuscript with, again, saying he wrote this when he was still a teenager. It is a classic commentary, and it was only really, I'm afraid to say this, but it could be that Rabbi Cooperman from Michala was the first one to publish it. I do believe that's the case. He certainly popularized it, and he put out a wonderful edition with wonderful notes to it, which makes it very, certainly makes it much more acceptable. I'm not sure if it was published before or not. I'm probably wrong about this, but he certainly created an edition that's understandable. One of the things that he does, which sometimes is very frustrating, and sometimes maybe you think is wonderful, is the amount of halacha that he reads back into the text, which means so sometimes you get the feeling that the biblical characters, according to the Meshech Chachma, are students of Talmud, and therefore they're involved in all kinds of Talmudic considerations. But sometimes he gives absolutely wonderful parshanut, but the commentary really fuses those two approaches, a halachic approach fused together with some very keen interpretations based on parshanut. Let's take a look what he does over here, source 10. Vayas Betzalel et Aaron. Right? Betzalel made the Aaron, madlok tiv bikulhu, which is not written by all the other things, okay, that we already know. Betzalel mishum shishar hadvarim asugam acherim bebeit olamim v'chein bebayit sheni ula'atid. Because all the other things were made by others, but who are the others that he's referring to? He's referring to Shlomo, he's referring to the time of Ezra, he's referring to Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni, which means there were other people who built all the other utensils in terms of history, but when it says that Betzalel made the Aaron, there was only one Aaron throughout history, and that's why it says that Betzalel made it. Yes, one second. So that is a very interesting comment. Correct or no? No, well, one second. It's the only one which is made. It has nothing to do with it being... You're referring back to the... After Bayit Rishon. No, there was none in Bayit Sheni, but there was no new one. There was no new one. Why? Because they didn't have a luchot anymore, so there was no need for an Aaron. So being that there never was another Aaron, so it says, no, but Salom made the Aaron. Aval Aaron mishin ignaz od lo asu acher ki in lasot luchot acherot. And why did they never make another Aaron? Because they couldn't make new luchot. And the purpose of the Aaron is to hold the luchot, so therefore you don't need another Aaron. V'rak Aaron b'tzalel hu shekiyem l'darot v'lo acher. Which means of all the things in the Mishkan, the thing which then gets transferred to the new Beit HaMikdash is the Aaron. Everything else is made brand new. The only thing which is still, don't tell me, don't use the word refurbished over here, the only thing which was still used was the Aaron which he made. He goes, Vidok, think about it. He's telling you, I just made a real good point, process. V'ulay dehikpira katuv, shelo ya'asu l'dorot Aaron v'kruvim, rak zeshasa b'tzalel. He goes, and it could be that there is actually a reason behind this, and let's see and try to understand the reason. He then quotes a Gemara that we've seen in the past, a Gemara that talks about that what happens when the Mikdash was destroyed and the heathens come and they see the, and they cheapen the Kruvim, they look at it as being something which it isn't, but let's skip down a little bit. Let's look 5 lines from the bottom. No, let's go further back than that. I'm sorry. Let's go back 7 lines from the top, towards the end of the line. It looks like words from the end. Ve'im kein, chashash Hashem yitbarach, God was concerned. Shema acharei shechatu be'egel, shema kishyaseh echad et aron, yavo laharher eza machshava zara, hanotelu darkei hatel masaot va'atzpehem. That just like the Gemara that I just now skipped, that he quotes, that when the heathen saw the Kruvim, they saw children, naked children, on top of the Aron, and they saw it in a cheap way, not in an elevated way. He said the same fear was regarding the construction of it. That when they make it, people will look at it and it's something which is not necessarily holy, but something which is cheap. And he stresses over here, especially after the golden calf, when they have sinned by making a golden calf, sinning. I mean, is somebody there going to cross their mind, look at this, God is telling us to build something which is essentially an idol, a molten golden form, and put it inside the Mishkan, when that was exactly what they did outside the Mishkan? Now that's, I mean, again, and the reality is that this is a phenomenal question that he's raising over here. And then he writes something interesting. L'chein, therefore, b'char b'tzalel. And therefore, b'tzalel was chosen. Why? She'avi aviv neharag. His grandfather was chor. His grandfather was killed, trying to prevent the building of the egel. Neharag al asher michat ba'asiyat ha'egel, protesting the building of the egel. Imkein mitzad hachinuch va'teva, shehu sone kol enotim acharei ha'hevel v'tziur shum d'mut v'tmuna. That means that his nature will now be to hate anything, to oppose building of any kind of form or golden form or so on. U'bayavola shumach shevazer aklal. He's the one who will be very far from any kind of thoughts of idolatry. He alone makes the Aaron, without any help from anyone else. Because according to this, it's saying he's the only one who can make it, because of his, again, as a continuation of his grandfather's opposition to the building of the Egel. Only somebody who opposes Avodah Zarah to the point of, what's real interesting here? Mesirut Nefesh. Only somebody who opposes it to the point of Mesirut Nefesh, the point of being killed in trying to prevent the building of it, only such a person can build it, but such a person isn't here. Why isn't he here? Because he's dead. So only the person who is going to be as connected as possible to the one who opposed it with Mesirut Nefesh, which means even in a sense, if you think about it now, is that B'Tzalel building this thing, there's going to be Mesirut Nefesh involved, because of this association. And then now it's real interesting, is this what Rashi had in back of his mind, again, which Rashi doesn't spell out, what the Meshech Chachma is saying over here. And that's why even before the making of the Egel, he says, I chose B'tzalel, the Emalei, and I will fill him with wisdom, and so on. And then after the golden calf, now it had to be done in a pure way, also in terms of thoughts, shlo yeharhu shum tziur geshem v'tavnit gmut klal. The person making it will not have any thoughts of idolatry whatsoever, as other people could have. V'ze malechet machshevet, and that's what it means when it says that you will make the work in your mind. That to make it in your mind is not just, again, what we saw from the very beginning, it's not just that you need a good architect. You need somebody who can deal with, you know, the calculations of how to build it. He's talking not about the mind in terms of making the proper calculations. He's talking about the purity of mind to be able to make something like the kruvim, which will stand on top of the aron. Shamachshava tehe, that the machshava will be tahora ubrura v'nikia, that the thoughts will be pure and clear and clean. So what the Meshech Chachma is again giving us, or telling us, explaining this, is a couple of really interesting points. He says the selection of Bezalel is specific. He says when it comes to the Aaron, it says Bezalel made the Aaron because you can claim when it comes to everything else, including the menorah, they were made other times in history. This is the only thing which is Bezalel made and no one else ever made. And therefore what we have over here, talk about foreshadowing, the foreshadowing is going to be foreshadowing for the next, you know, thousands of years. It's only, and by the way, that may be the idea as well. Correct, you say 3,000 years, is that it was suppressed and it's hidden, and the third Beit HaMikdash, again, it's going to have the Aaron of Bezalel. It means Bezalel is the only one who makes this. Why is he the only one to make it? So then the Meshech Chachma is a very simple explanation. He's the only one who can make it. That anybody else would not have the same level of purity. It's his connection with his grandfather Hur. Hur is the one who is Moser Nefesh. He does try to fight off the golden calf. He's the one who gives up his life to try to prevent the golden calf. Everyone else, the Meshech Chachma feels there may have been some kind of risk involved. When it comes to Bezalel, he's the one who will approach it with absolute purity and therefore an absolute understanding and absolute holiness, and therefore it's only Bezalel who can make the Aaron. So have we necessarily resolved the issue, was there one, was there two, was there three? Not necessarily, but when we come to the Aaron of Bezalel, then there is only one. Whether Moshe made one or not, as we saw that, it could be an argument between, in the end of the day, it may be an argument between the Rishalmi and the Bavli, but it may also end up being an argument between Rashi and between the Ramban, and so on.
Yeah. What I picked away from this, in a more general level, is the supreme importance of Kavanah, where a person's soul and mind is, in terms of what he's doing, not just what he's doing.
Correct. And maybe we'll need one more source then, just to finish that up. He was young. Correct. Roger correct.
Was young, okay. Was
correct.
Young.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Excuse me.
What is the word
Talmud? I don't know. I'm not. I don't know where you are right now. Turn to. Oh, it's talking about talismans.
Ah, talisman.
Right. Source 18. Source 18. Generally, if you don't understand a word in Hebrew, because it's not Hebrew. Source 18. Umiyasahu, again, Medrash Tanchuma, which we'll finish up with. And who? Miyaso, Bezalel. Bezalel made it. Shenem of Ayas Bezalel. Here it's a Bezalel made it. Amr, I'm not sure who that. Reb Chiyot should be Ditziporin. Shalosh Tevot Asa Bezalel et Aaron. He made three compartments to the Aaron. Shtaim shel zahav v'achad shel eitz. Shik'a shel eitz betoch shel zahav. He put the wood in the gold. V'shel zahav betoch shel eitz. And then put the gold inside. So therefore it gets surrounded by gold. V'achach tzipash sfoteim zahav. And then he surrounds the outside with gold. L'kai mitzvat aseh. Shenema v'itzapehu zahav tahor mibaitum b'chutz. As it's to fulfill the command, it says to cover it with gold. Vayaslo zer, and then continues, and you put the gold on the outside. Mikan, from here we learn, sheyet talmud chacham, that a wise person should be tocho kiboro, that his inside should be like his outside. Which means that where do you learn the source that a person should be pure on the inside, and again, not just on the outside, shenemar mebaitu mechutz titzpetenu, which means basically saying is that by virtue of the fact that the gold is the inside and the outside. Because think a second. All I need to do is to put the gold on the outside, because the gold on the inside no one's going to see. But he says, no, the gold on the inside is just as important. So it's almost surprising now that the Meshech Chachma didn't quote this, because this is basically what he's saying, is that the only person who can build it is somebody who understands exactly what's being built, and what's being built is something which is going to be pure on the inside and pure on the outside, and only somebody like Bezalel was like that. Have a good Shabbos.